the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. This is Sid Garza Hillman and the Approaching the Natural podcast, my weekly podcast where I discuss all things related to health and happiness, how to live better in the modern world. Mostly, I focus on my small steps approach, my unique small steps approach. I'm going to get into that a little bit this week, just in general. What I'm realizing is that a lot of new listeners who've come on only have access in iTunes anyway to the most recent 50. We've been getting deep in the most recent 50. I'm going to spend just a few minutes today kind of revisiting in general my small steps approach, how it in general works. However, if you want to go back and listen to the pre-most recent 50, in other words, the 1 through 50-ish, I can't do math, 1 through 58, sure, you can go to SidGarzaHillman.com and listen to all those episodes right from the beginning when I used the wrong microphone on the first episode. And I urge you to do that. But I'm going to revisit, which I should in general, because again, we go pretty deep nowadays. So I'm going to get bigger, I'm going to back out a little bit. There we go. If you are just joining me, welcome. And if you're here because you've been here before, great. And you will benefit from me broadening the scope too. Good. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Strava, Sid Garza Hillman. Been getting a good amount of new Strava followers, I'm assuming, because of that bastard Matt Frazier, who I love. I love him. Love him and all his way more people following him. It's great, Matt. It's really great. No, I'm just kidding. He's fantastic. And you should follow him, nomeatathlete.com. Go over there immediately. But I got some new Strava followers, which is cool. And you know, I follow you right back. So if you followed me, you know that because you just got followed back. Boom. Man of my word. More on that later. Anyway, so another bit of business, SidGarzaHillman.com is that website. You can put your email in and get a free chapter of my book and also get notifications of podcasts and blogs and everything else. Pretty cool, right? And you can see videos and all that kind of stuff. You can also support the podcast by hitting the donate button, throw me some loose change, whatever you got. It really does help you guys in a real, very real way. And I'm not kidding. As small as you can do, I'll take it. It does help. I spend a lot of time coming here each week to try to help you guys do what you do. But again, this is a free podcast, so it's only if you feel like it, okay? You can also buy t-shirts, mugs, and bracelets through my website too. Those are Approaching the Natural tidbits, and also the bracelets are What Would I Do bracelets. The message here in this podcast is, has been, and always will be one of empowerment. And when you put on your bracelet on your wrist, What Would I Do, it ain't talking about Sid. It's talking about you. And the idea is that the closer you get to yourself, who you truly are, in situations where you find yourself somewhat indecisive, chances are, this is what I truly believe, you already know the course of action you would take, all things being equal. You may not take it in that moment, but I think it's useful knowledge to know what you would take if you were a little closer. And I think none of us are, none is in the place of perfection. And we don't all act in accordance with our values and standards at every given moment. That would be impossible. But I think the more that we get to know who we are in this process and in general is going to be beneficial to us in the way that we live. It's going to make us feel happier, and it's going to relate to our health in a very, very real way, in a stress-related way. So I'm not trying to sell you a bracelet. I'm just saying that's part of the general message here. But another bit of business before I get into that a little more deeply. Okay? Stanford Inn is where I head up their wellness center. There's some retreats going on. I am literally days away from finalizing the vegan running retreats. I can't wait. They're super cool. I'm just waiting to hear back from Matt Frazier, who will be joining me on those retreats. This is like going to be big time, and I'm super happy. We're keeping the numbers low on these, so if you guys want to join, get in and get in soon, because it's we're keeping the numbers going to get 15 per retreat. So it's going to be a very, very exclusive, fun, but a lot of personal attention and just like this really great thing. It's going to be super cool, and the runs are going to be amazing. So I've got things planned out already in my brain. I will be at the Portland Veg Fest. That's right around the corner now, all of a sudden, just about a month away from this podcast anyway, November 14th and 15th of 2015. The website is nwveg.org/vegfest. After that, next April, MarshallTexasHealthFest.com is where you'll find me, and moving on. I also have been getting a good amount of YouTube subscribers and views. Thank you guys. And please do subscribe, spread the word, spread those around. Okay. I always benefit from iTunes reviews as well. That's a way to support the podcast too. Or, you know, Amazon. Good. Let's get that out of the way. Okay, good. So, what's going on here? Okay, I want to just jump in kind of the general small steps thing. This is going to take literally 3 minutes. No, nay, not literal. Okay, I overused that word a little bit. Not literal, but a few minutes. Let's just say that. Literally. Okay. My small steps approach is, excuse me, to, and I am drinking an espresso today. That's just, you'll know that that's related fully in a second. I crafted this approach now years ago, pre my book, obviously, because my book was about this, in response to frustration, a little bit of failure, in my part as a certified nutritionist to get people to adopt my recommendations. My recommendations, sure, they've evolved over time, but at their core, they really haven't differed and changed that much. Partly because I don't think that in the food realm anyway, I think we've overcomplicated the food realm just like we've overcomplicated virtually every realm, fitness included. I don't think what we actually need to do is that complicated versus what we can do or feel like we're sold to do in the modern world. My small steps approach simply came from saying, okay, there's a whole bunch of different ways trying to get people to live better. We couch some of those things in terms of weight loss. We couch some of those things in terms of a six-pack ab. If you have one six-pack ab, by the way, it's probably a problem. You should have six-pack abs, probably. I'm not a doctor. My point is that all of us are, well, all the things that we're approached with, all the things that we can look in the marketplace and go, okay, well, this is what I want or this is what I think I want. My belief is, all of us really want and are designed for the same thing, which is to be healthy and happy. It might look to some people like weight loss or that weight loss is that thing that we want, but I think it goes beyond that. My small steps approach is how to approach your life. It is how to wake up every day. It is how to adopt a few things like how to do the best thing you can in how best way you can, how to do the best thing for yourself in any circumstance, how to change your circumstance over time, most of the time, how to lose the concepts of perfection and failure, how to kind of throw those to the side a little bit for the good of you, for the good of how you live, for the good of how you feel. I think these are necessary acts in the way that you approach your life if you want to be healthier and happier, which I think we all do. My small steps approach is simply saying, okay, of the things that I see in my world right now, are there things that I would do better? Are there things that I want to do better? Are there ways that I want to live better? For most of us, the answer is yes. And I believe that to be true because the modern world is so nutty nut-nut that it's really hard for us to be fully healthy and happy. I don't even know what that would mean anyway, but I think for most of us, including me, there's places to move. I think there's places to move. I think it's a good, healthy way to say, there are places I can make moves. I think that we get hung up on things like perfection when we think I should be doing that. I should be doing that thing. Well, that thing may be too much for you. I think that my small steps approach is to help and empower each of you to find out what it is you're able to take on at any given moment, knowing that that changes over time too. So as I've said before a million times, and I'm doing one today, my dial back day, which is 100% fruit all day, sounds crazy to so many people, but to other people, they're doing fruit most days, period. So it's all relative and it changes over time. 10 years ago, doing fruit all day would have seemed absolutely crazy to me and I never would have done that. Well, right now in my life, it doesn't seem crazy at all. In fact, I welcome it and I love it. So the small steps approach is one where I don't really prescribe steps per se, even with my clients. Yeah, there's a few where I'll say, what do you think about this? But it's always, what do you think about this? It's never, this is what you're going to do. It's, do you think this would be good for you? Can we, and beyond that, by the way, it's teaching people to say, okay, maybe you're on the fence about this new step. Well, how powerful is it if you say, all right, I'm just going to do it anyway. Worst case scenario, it's too much. You back down. That's my very definition of success. Are you doing something good for yourself? Some things in the marketplace are antithetical to that. In other words, if you don't achieve the prescribed thing, then it is failure. If you don't make it past day six in a diet, it is a failure. It's a failure in the context of that diet, because the diet isn't asking you, what do you think you're able to take on? What can you take on? The diet is saying, do this on day five. Well, it sounds good. And boy, that the sell of that weight loss is so, it's so tantalizing. I get it. I get it because I've been there. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And as long as I've done this, I am still with virtually every client, and with so many podcast listeners, having to answer this question is, well, what do I do? I feel that there's this urge that it should be going faster. It should be going fast. People, I mentioned last week, people tell us, well, if you did this, it would go faster. What is it? What is going to go faster? Health and happiness? Is that going to go fast? Weight loss may go faster. Yes, weight loss may go faster because there's 1,000 different ways to lose weight super duper fast. There are not 1,000 ways to lose weight and keep it off, and or better yet, maintain a healthy weight to be healthy. There's really, when you start to really get at what we want, there really aren't that many ways. The Atkins diet made you lose weight, but it didn't make you healthy, and it didn't make you happy, and it didn't make it last. Paleo diet is essentially the new Atkins diet. It's telling people what they want to hear, and so they're doing it too, and it's going to be short term because it's not part of the process of finding out how you want to live your life. I think diets in general, they don't sell us, they don't deliver. They sell us, but they don't deliver. And I think when you put a diet on something, then you go, okay, well, this is what I'm supposed to do. Well, I think what you're supposed to do ultimately to live better, to live healthier and happier, is to learn how to make decisions about your own life. Learn how to make choices about your own life. The choices you make may look like the paleo diet, but they're not going to be the paleo diet because you came to them yourself. And I really want to be clear about that. I certainly have ideas about nutrition, but I don't prescribe them to a diet. I have ideas about how to help people empower themselves to make decisions that are in line with who they are. But behind that, how to help people find out who they are. And so if you're just joining me, that's where I come from on this. I'm very passionate about this subject because I see people being taken. I see people being criticized all the time. I see people saying, knowing at their heart of hearts that this is a way they want to approach their lives because I'm not telling them what to do. They know it in their heart of hearts and they want to do it. And the draw and the power of the external world to them, of their family that's telling them they're doing it wrong, of their friends who are telling them they're doing it wrong, of a coworker at the water dispenser who says, my blah, 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 I got pills for you. You could buy, my sister-in-law sells them. And you feel this pressure. Like, I know this seems right, but man, the draw that I could just take some pills and lose weight. But I want you to remember, every time that you're up against that kind of thing, and I do see it as up against, remember, or I hope to help you remember that quickly you realize what it is that you really want, and it's not what those pills are going to deliver. They might deliver weight loss, but what you really want is to be healthy and happy, to live your life well, to do the things better that make you healthy and happy. And when you realize that weight loss is one of the side effects to this thing, I want to devalue weight loss just like I want to devalue food. Those things come, but they're part of the picture. They're part of the bigger picture of living better in the modern world. How to negotiate this crazy, crazy world that we are living in. And the fact of the matter is, without getting political, because it doesn't really matter what party, the people ruling us and the people in charge in many cases are not healthy or happy, and they're making choices about us and our lives and our system. Now, maybe just because I'm totally resentful because I owe money in taxes. Sure. It could be that in some small way. But the fact is it is up to us, each of us alone, each of us individually, to learn how to make choices to negotiate this world better. When we put our blinders on, when we walk into the world and say, the government will take care of it. When we walk into the world and say, you know, I'll just do what, you know, this ad sounds good to me. If we don't attach ourselves to the power we already have in us, we will fall prey and we will be bounced around, like I've said, like a pinball ball machine, just bouncing around and all these things. That's what happens. That is yo-yo dieting. That is bouncing around from quick fix to quick fix. I'm all for trying fun stuff. If you see a DVD that you dig and you want to try an exercise DVD, I think you should. I think that when you put it into proper perspective and say, this is something I just want to try and see if I like it, I think that's fantastic. If you try that thing because you think it's going to solve your problems and make you healthy and happy, then I think you're setting yourself up for failure. I think that eventually working your way into where you can try something like that or even a diet and experiment and fun and it may work and you may stick with it, great. And if you don't, wasn't for you, wasn't you. Good. That's a much better place than I failed at this thing. I couldn't stick with this thing. Why couldn't I do that? I should have been able to do that. I have 10 minutes a day. I should have been able to do that. Those are the messages I'm trying to get rid of in all of you because I don't think they have a place in living healthy and happy. I don't think they're realistic and I don't think they're you. I don't think they're you. I think you've set yourself, I think the marketplace sets you up for failure because it makes you keep coming back. That's powerful stuff. That's better marketing than I'll ever know how to do. Well, put it this way. It's better marketing than I ever will do because I don't, it's not ethical for me. It's not ethical for me to sell you fear and to sell you failure so that you keep coming back. That's why I look at this podcast as somewhat of just a reminder. And by the way, it's freaking free so that you can come back. And even when I work with clients, by the way, who get deep into my actual system, It's relatively short term. It's like a month here, month there. It's not years. That's for a reason. And it works for most of my clients because it sets you up to then continue on your own. Sometimes they bounce back given their life changes and they pop in, but they don't pop in for a year. They pop in for another month, get recalibrated, boom, they're back on their way. That's a model that works for me. That's why I'm more successful now than I was 6 years ago when I began. 7 years ago as a nutritionist. I'm more successful now because it's not just about nutrition, but it's also because of the way that I help people approach their lives. It's a philosophy. This is a philosophy podcast above all else. Okay. Now the people I hang out with in this world have their own kinds of things. And sometimes I get kind of, you know, I'm part of that world. I speak at veg fests, but really I'm not a veg fest kind of practitioner, really. It's a philosophy of health. And that's what I bring to the Veg Fest too. And so I think sometimes people in the audience go, what the? And so that's good. That's a good thing. I want people to think, okay? Okay, good. Of course, I think my way is the most effective. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this. It may not be, but it's what I believe. And so, like I said, I'm very passionate about that. And so I'm bringing it to you every week. That's what that is. Okay, so that took more than 3 minutes. Sure. But you know, please email me if you have any questions about this podcast at sidgarzahillman.com. I love hearing feedback and, you know, whatever. I love just keeping in contact. I love getting emails from people all around the world. This is a still after 2 years, an amazing, medium for me to know that I can sit here and record this in my little podcast studio and it gets distributed around the world and people are listening. And that's an amazing thing for me. And it's what it is. I'm 46, almost 47. So perhaps I'm in that, you know, that generation. I've referred to myself a few times as pretty much 50 and my wife just not having it. She's like, you're not 50. I think because she knows that if I'm 50, but I'm not 50. She's like, you're not freaking 50. Okay. If you're following me on Instagram, the fence is done. It's pretty much done. It's done. Here's what it's done about. It's done to the point where the horse is here and contained in a beautiful corral that I built with my wife, and the kids were out there helping. It was kind of fun, but sort of like I need a freaking day off. I've been working on weekends on this thing. But the horse arrived. This is not an exaggeration. About 15 minutes after the fence got finished, the horse came from my wife's cousin in Idaho who gave us this horse. It's a rescue, and it showed up 15 minutes after we had finished the fence. Otherwise, we would have had to not be able to have the horse in our pasture that night. So anyway, came yesterday. We're very excited. My daughter is ecstatic. My children are ecstatic. Very cool. I posted pictures, if you're interested, on Facebook and Instagram to see. I'm going to cut a little video about it too. Very cool. Very cool process. A lot of hard work, but kind of cool too. Okay, so let's get into this stuff, okay? Let's get into this whole thing that I do. I got a few things to bounce around with you today. Wanted to touch on discipline, which I did, but I wanted to last or 2 weeks ago, but I wanted to add one more thing about that. Here's my point. All of us have discipline. All of us are disciplined. And here's why. We all have behaviors that we do every day. I refer to it as your wall of behaviors. I could look at virtually everybody listening to this podcast right now, and I do through my camera, my network of cameras. And so the braids, by the way, love them. I love the double braids. Good, good move, you in Idaho. Very nice. Oh, no, those are dreadlocks. Sorry, the resolution just came through. Okay. We all have discipline. I can say this about all of you. You all brush your teeth every day. That's a good chance that most of you do. That's a very disciplined thing that you do. Boy, you really discipline. You really do that. You take a shower, you bathe. I don't, but you probably do most days. That's discipline. That's a good discipline that you guys have. You might call your parents once a week. You might, you know, go out with friends or keep in contact, write a letter, write an email to a friend to keep in touch on a regular basis. That's very disciplined of you. The only question that comes into play in this process is what you have discipline for. But I think that we need to get away from this whole, like, I'm very disciplined, he has discipline, she's very disciplined. We all have disciplines. It's only a question of what you have discipline for, or more importantly, what you want to be disciplined about, what you want to have discipline for. It is always, and I just assume kick the discipline word right out of the freaking room, because what I'm really getting at is the decision-making process in this small steps approach comes down to this, which is what behaviors do you want to have as part of your life? When you small step in, it will look like discipline, but eventually those will be those things that you do. If you want to exercise most days, you will do them via the small steps process, which could start out with 5 minutes once a week, and eventually you exercise every day, and everybody's going to look at you and go, boy, that person is so disciplined. They exercise 6 days a week. To you, it's so what you do every day because of the way you eased into it that you do, it's not even a struggle. Really, your struggles come up. They come up. There's days I don't want to, you know, run, and I run anyway. There's a day like today where I didn't want to run and didn't run because I was building fences all weekend. I was bodily like, okay, got that done. Usually I take Sundays off, and yesterday I worked all day carrying heavy stuff all day. So I didn't run today. But for the most part, when you ease your way in and get to a place where a new behavior is ingrained in your life, it looks like discipline, but it's not, because it's not about you having to force yourself. You got there and people look at you and they make those judgments. There they are again, right? But you know, you're like, yeah, I guess I'm disciplined. I mean, that's why I brought that up a few weeks ago, because somebody's like, you're very disciplined. It's like, I run 6 days a week. I struggle with that, maybe do 2 days a month. Otherwise, I get my stuff in my bag and I'm hanging out with my kids in the morning and have espresso with my wife, and we get in the car and take the kids to school and I go for a run, and I don't really even think about it. Just like I don't really think about brushing my teeth, which I guess you could say I'm super disciplined about because I brush my teeth every day, twice a day. So again, what is the perception of this? What are the perception of people have about you? And furthermore, it doesn't freaking matter because it's about you and you alone. More on that in a second. Okay, so at any given moment. Okay, good. All right. But I wanted to mention something today in sort of the greater subject or, you know, context of that, which is today I'm in my dial back day. Okay, I did pretty well on weekends. I got a couple things going on about the dial back day. Hashtag dial back day, by the way, if you want to use that. I launched it and I used it today for the first time. That's how savvy a social mediaist I am. I launched a hashtag on my podcast, not even on social media, and have used it only one time in 3 weeks that I launched it. Boy, I got it going on. No wonder the freaking diets are beating me out. Okay. So my dial back day is today. This weekend, kind of, you know, just building fences and just kind of, you know, like last night we got pizza, and just because it was like we worked all day, we got the horse. We're like, okay, we're ordering pizza. So they've got this place in town that has a non-dairy pizza, et cetera, et cetera. But it's white flour, it's freaking junk food. And non-dairy cheese is typically junk food. Good. This espresso is not junk food. It's in my little travel, my wife's little travel mug that I bought her, and then I use it. Such a cute little guy. So my dial back days today, you guys know it's fruit only. It's a shocking the volume of food that I eat on my dial back day. It's a volume that is unprecedented typically for me day to day without the more concentrated calories that I typically consume, like my cashew ranch dressing. Without that, I'm to consume this same amount of calories that I need in general, I'm eating a much greater volume of food. If you're questioning what the hell I'm talking about, go watch my video on Nutrition Made Simple, okay? I'm eating very low concentration of calories, meaning the food that I'm eating takes up a lot of space for the calories it delivers. It's fruit, so tonight I'm having 3 cantaloupes for dinner, okay? Calorically, it's the same as a Big Mac and large fries. Got it? Good. Here we go. But I'm walking through the kitchen today at the Stanford Inn, where I run the wellness center, and I'm walking through the kitchen, and there's macaroons laid out because they do this dessert thing for the guests in the afternoon. So I'm walking through, and I just noted post having this moment, because first I had the moment, then I was like, holy crap, I just had that moment, where it was like, it was as if in the same, I don't know how this is possible in the human psyche, just the psychology of humans blows my mind, because it was almost instantaneous that I wanted a macaroon and didn't want a macaroon. I mean, how's that? I don't even know how that's possible. I was like, I want that macaroon. I don't want that macaroon. It had the same tenor of voice. Like, it wasn't like, I want it, but I don't want it. It was like, I want the macaroon. I don't want the macaroon. I mean, it was like the same person. In the moment, I saw the macaroon, wanted it, didn't want it. The beauty of this small steps process is you have that moment over time. Well, no, you have the moment right away. But over time, and this is what I got. This was a success for me. Pretty quickly, I realized who was the real me. It was like, you know, like, and who's the real you? And up from the blank, you know, from the freaking curtains, I walk out and I'm like, I'm the guy who doesn't want the macaroons. And they're like, yay, the audience, and I win a freaking Ford Focus. And so, but there's those moments. And so if you're in a place, which sometimes I am too, where I have that single moment, there's days where I, you know, I make the choice that wasn't me. This is really speaking in large part to the me, not me game, but I make the choice. I grab the macaroon and I go afterwards. I go, ah, crap, that wasn't me. And there's a buzzer in the game show. Ah, you know, got that wrong. Okay. And I go home to Wisconsin and my family's all disappointed. So in those moments, but it just was more like, wow, what a mind blower, how humans can. And this is what I believe. I believe it's because we have choices around things that we never should have had choices around, like food. In nature, I never would walk up to a macaroon and go, should I, shouldn't I, do I feel like it, do I not? Like this conversation we have around, I've mentioned this 1,000 times in this podcast, but I think that feeds into this thing where our brains are just not equipped. We want calories because we are designed to need and look for calories in the easiest way possible. But we don't want calories because in the modern world, we have too many of them around and we have foods that aren't healthy for us that never would exist in nature. And we're put up against that stuff. It's so hard. It's so hard. What do we do about it? Well, we small step. We don't follow diets. We say, okay, what am I willing to take on? What am I able to take on? Not what should I take on? What am I able to take on? One more thing I want to add about the generalness of my small steps approach is this, and this is possibly the thing that sets me apart from most other people who talk about small steps, and there ain't a lot of them, by the way. It's this. It's that there is no one prescribed size of the small step. What is small is simply the very minimum you're able to do with the very least amount of disruption in your life. But there's disruption. My God, there's disruption when you want to add something new in your life because there's no way to get around that. But the size of your step is going to be dictated by what you're able to take on. Guess who decides what you're able to take on? You. You decide that. That's what you learn. You learn to decide what kind of step you're able to take on with a minimal amount of stress and disruption. On top of that, and these are the sort of recurring messages of my approaches, when you contemplate that, when you consider that and go, okay, well, what is the size of step that I can do with minimal stress? Guess what you're doing? You're taking care of yourself. Your thinking becomes about your own well-being. Your thinking becomes about how to be happy in the moment. Your thinking becomes about how to, that you are worth taking care of. These are the things that are absent from every prescribed quick fix out there. There's There's no lessons of day-to-day, moment-to-moment, you taking good care of yourself, you being worth taking care of yourself. When you take a small step that 99.9% of people look at you and go, that's nothing. That's not going to make you lose weight. When you put cucumbers on your plate, that like a piece of cucumber, that's like nothing because it's not even going to make you, my voice is like evolving into different characters in the same sentence. But when you do that, it doesn't change. It's not helping you because put it this way. When people say that they're not getting what you're doing, they're not getting what you're doing. You've taken a very powerful step. And in doing that, you are going to see those results. So I wanted to, on that note, I wanted to touch upon this, which is what I call the specificity of results. The specificity of results. Okay, here's what I mean. In most cases, in my approach, in most cases, the first step, the initial step of any behavior, let's say you say, okay, well, I know that movement is good for me. I know that I need to exercise, whatever. Some doctor tells you or some practitioner says you really need to exercise because you're not exercising. Okay, got it. But you listen to me and you go, okay, well, I know that I want to exercise. Hopefully you're not saying you should exercise, but I know that I want to. I know that it's good for me and I think it would be a benefit for my life. Good, great. And so I'm going to adopt Sid's approach and I'm going to say, okay, well, usually in the past, I would go get a DVD or I would join a gym and I would go for an hour every day and spend $100, on a month for a gym membership. And then after a month, not go and waste $100 a month. Okay, fine. But now I'm going to try to begin moving by figuring out, well, what is my first step here? Okay, well, my first step is going to be, what can I handle? Well, I'm really busy and I have kids and the idea of exercising or even going out of my door to exercise is maddening to me, and it actually seems dreading. I could force myself to do it, but in my past, I know that I've done this before and I never stick to it. So why is that? Well, maybe I take on too much, et cetera, et cetera. Good. I'm going to do one squat per day. Now there is when I even say one squat per day, there's like a pull of like, wow, that's like so, how much we are trained in this modern world by marketing. It's unbelievable how much we are just brainwashed. Okay, so you start out with one squat per day. Now, I've actually started people off with one squat per day, so I ain't whistling Dixie here, okay? Don't know what that means, but I'm not whistling the Dixie. In the beginning, the initial step of any behavior that you want to add into your life has very little to do with what you think it does. Here's what I mean. That squat has virtually nothing to do with fitness, with caloric expenditure, with making your thighs stronger, with making your stomach flatter, with you losing weight, virtually nothing. In the beginning, these are about incorporating a behavior into your day-to-day. They are about making cracks in that wall of behavior that have to be so small because if you try it too much, that wall is going to kick them right back out because it can't take too much. It needs to be adjusted in very, very minute ways. Again, how minute? Up to you. If you already run 3 miles a day and you want to increase, you might go to 3.5 miles per day or 3.1 miles per day. Again, it's relative. Your small step is bigger than the person who does one squat. But what's the same for everybody is their step is ideally over time. You realize what it can be. Your step is good for you. It's good in your life. It makes sense for your logistics. It makes sense for your schedule. Knowing that everybody's schedules and family lives and work lives and everything else are different. Got it? Good. The specificity of results is that over time, the results that you get from this process become more specific. In the beginning, they're in general about a behavior, putting a new behavior in your life. Over time, as you build that step, they do become more about your thighs getting stronger, your stomach getting flatter, you losing weight, your blood pressure going down, all of those benefits that you get real from exercise. But in the beginning, to expect those things from one squat per day, that's not the result you're going for in the beginning. Or at least not what I'm trying to teach you about. When you try to make the results that you want immediate, weight loss, lower blood pressure, lower cholesterol, all these kinds of things, when you go jump right to them, that's when you're setting yourself up for burnout. When you set yourself up for, I want to incorporate a healthy behavior in my life, I want to live better because I want to live better. I want to be happier and I want to incorporate this into my life. Okay, I'm going to do it this way. In the beginning, just take note that whatever you do, that cucumber on your plate, trust me, it truthfully, if you're having a, Big Mac, supersized fries, and a large Coke, and that's what you do for dinner because you're used to it and it gives you pleasure, and you go, well, I probably want to eat better and I really want to feel better. I haven't been feeling better, so I'm going to start by putting a stalk of celery on my plate. In the beginning, that stalk of celery has virtually nothing to do on any real substantial level with the health of your body. Sure, it's going to be something, but calorically, it's like 3 calories, and the Big Mac and everything else is 900 calories, so there's your proportion. But how powerful that message is that you've put something healthy on your plate, that's what I need. You dig that in, and you get that going. Over time, that stalk of celery turns into 2 stalks of celery, turns into a side salad, turns into, you know, a healthier burger, whatever that step is for you over time, okay? That's what this is. The specificity of results comes from consistency over time. No real change in your life, no matter what you're trying to, no matter what people are trying to sell you in the modern world, no real change can happen without consistency over time. That's what I'm teaching you to do. If you think that you can cheat this, you are probably have just been sold something that you're going to burn out on, and you just wasted $14.95 on that book that tells you what to do on day 12, regardless of how good the information is in the beginning. The steps over time, just so you know, do become about weight loss. But man, the struggle that I have with my clients and with you guys is to get you into focus of really what's happening here and how it does take time. The reason why people come out of the woodwork to tell you about everything you're doing wrong is because they're used to seeing faster results in terms of weight loss, not in terms of health and happiness, by the way, but in terms of, they never say you can get happier faster than this. They always go, you can lose weight faster than this. It's because there's no other way to become healthy and happy unless you do something over time, unless you learn how to create real lasting change over time. In the beginning, it's about building the behavior. Over time, it becomes, once the behavior is set, it becomes building on that behavior, and eventually it does become about the results that you initially wanted to incorporate that behavior to get, i.e. healthy weight and all the things I've listed 1,000 times. Got it? Specificity of results. That's what you're going for over time, but that takes time. Okay? Man, I wish people would shut up about the criticism. Just tell them if somebody goes, you should be doing this faster. Yeah, go listen to the Small Steps podcast. They want the Approaching the Natural podcast. Listen to the guy who talks about small steps. Or just say, I got this. Okay? I got this. All right. I wish I could just each one of you just be like, good. Okay, just, you're doing great. If you feel pressure that it's not going fast enough, guess what? Bump it up. I mean, that's the thing. When you remove failure out of this picture, bump it up. I mean, a lot of times clients will email me months after I've worked with them, and I can tell in their language that they want to lose weight faster. I go, hey, maybe you're ready to jump in on a more aggressive a more aggressive small steps in the food realm. But you've got this foundation set where you can handle that, and worst case scenario is it's too much and you back down, but you know the whole process is totally successful. There, you're good. There's no failure there. You didn't say, oh, I can't do that, so therefore, screw it. I'm getting out of everything. You go, oh, okay, let me make a little adjustment there. That's just little adjustments, not big wide swings, little adjustments. Okay, good. When I was at UCLA years ago, okay, I graduated in 1991. You can look it up if you want. Made the Dean's Honors list my senior year. Not so good my freshman year. Okay, got academic probation my freshman year, but learned how to sort of studying, procrastinate. By the time I was a senior, man, all pistons firing, just yes. And then I graduated and just damn. Anyway, there was a building on campus, on UCLA campus, still there, called Royce Hall. And I remember when I went for freshman orientation in 1987, before my freshman year, this guy took us around. His name was Mike. I totally think that's relevant to the story. He took a group of, during orientation, group of freshmen around. He was telling us this and that. And the Royce Hall, I always remember to this day, has 2 towers. And I think one of them has like 3 window type things on them. I'm not an architecture major, so I have no idea what I'm talking about. And then the other tower has 2. And the story about that was that the people who built it believed that, or at least this was modeled after architecture that came from this belief, that only God can make something perfect, and so man can't. And so there was an intentional imperfection there. Now, this could all be crap. They could have just been BSing us. And I was like, oh, whatever you say is right. And I hit puberty late. And so two towers, intentionally unequal. Three on one side, two on the other side, because man can't achieve perfection. And yet, so this is what I find interesting, is that that sort of ethic, especially in the religious realm, and I'm not religious in that way, so I'm more of a spiritual, less of religious. Got it? Good. Is this sort of this like perfection? Look, I'm going to mention perfection because boy, does that come up. We should be perfect. We should be able to do all these things. These speak to this some sort of weird idea, and frankly, it is kind of weird, of perfection, what that is. I don't even know what that, if you really think about perfection, if you sort of envision a perfect human being, it's not one thing. Who knows what the hell that is? I think perfect is you entering your life in the craziest world that I could ever even imagine, which is this world, entering your life, doing pretty darn good for yourself every day. I think that's perfect. I think that's amazing. But the fact that we would take efforts to be imperfect while at the same time expecting some sort of perfection in ourselves is a real weird thing. It's sort of in that same way that I can want a macaroon and not want a macaroon in the same moment. It's, oh, of course we're not. Nobody's perfect, but the expectation of ourselves is that we can follow a diet perfectly. I think that's crazy. I think it's, again, setting us up for failure. How to deal with these issues of perfection is, again, I think it's a distraction from what we want, which is to be healthy and happy. When we get hung up on concepts of perception of perfection, if we get hung up on concepts of failure, then we get it's about those words and less about the ideas behind those words, which are, again, how to be healthy and happy. Okay, so I just wanted to throw that out there. Now, into the stress. Stress being a recurring theme, I think my biggest umbrella over which, on top of which almost everything I talk about resides, under which anyway. Look, pick your pronoun. Pick your preposition. Wow, I'm off the freaking rails right now. Good, I'm rolling. It's the espresso talking, you guys. Okay, good. There, in terms of what I read about stress in general, especially chronic stress, but really stress of any kind, some of the stress that we experience is from a perceived lack of control. This is very, 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 very relevant in my practice, a perceived lack of control. What I've referred to recently in this podcast as thought stress. When I ask people, are you stressed all the time? And 99.9% of people say yes. And even if they say not really, maybe they're eating light box food, so their bodies are under stress. It's never, 99.9% of people, it's never because they're in a life and death situation all the time. Now, they may have a one time where they had a life and death situation and they'll remember those times because they're so infrequent. But the general chronic stress that they have, repeated stress and recovery, but never fully recovery, right, is thought stress. But some of that comes from this thing, which is perceived lack of control. Because I want to point this out, which is that real lack of control is stressful. When it's a real lack of control, when you have cancer and you're put through this rigmarole of all the things that we do in Western medicine is anyway with cancer, part of the stress of that whole world is that you're just being thrown around and you're just, and you do have a, it's real in a way because you're just being kind of put around, and some people actually do lose any kind of semblance of actual control. Now, real lack of control. You're in an airplane and it's going down. That's real lack of control. Of course, that's stressful. You get attacked on a, mugged on a street. There's a real lack of control in many of those cases, okay? Times of violence and things like that. But for most of us in the day-to-day, it's a perceived lack of control. A perceived, that's what throws us a lot. And I find it very interesting that in some ways, there's a relief when people have health problems and they say, my doctor couldn't figure it out. He's never, she's never, it's never seen it before. And there's like that joy where people get like, they've never seen it before. And sort of like the weight is lifted. Or they go, that marathoner had a heart attack. See, that guy was doing everything right and you still have a heart attack. Okay. Yes, it's out of our control. There's sort of that relief there. But at the same time, I think there's also stress that there's things that we can somehow, we think we're doing everything right and we still are going to be set up for a heart attack. That's a weird, again, another weird place that we live in this world. Here's where I err. So in other words, we're stressed by the perception that we don't have control, but then the results in the world are from this perception that we don't have control. And so we're bounced around and we actually suffer real stress as a result of it. We want to feel like we play a part in our lives. I think that's I don't want to say instinct because that doesn't really speak to it correctly. But I think that most of us feel like we want to have we're a player in our movie. The perceived lack of control is this idea that even when we actually can do things, we think we can't. That's the place where I want to dive in with people and say, what do you have control over? Now, there are things, like I said, that are real. There's really things we don't have control over. We can't help those things. But when it's perceived lack of control, that is when we can get into our lives in a much deeper, more profound, more effective way. And that's by looking at the things that we want in our lives and saying, okay, what can I do? It's coming at your life with a what can I do way to live instead of can't do anything about that. I'm going to specifically address this sort of like, she ran a marathon, she was a great runner, and she ate great, and she still had a heart attack. It must be genetic. We love genetics because, again, there's that like, can't do anything about it. I think that that partly plays to failure because if you think you can do something about it and you're not, then you think you failed. If somebody says it's genetics, you might as well eat burgers all day, which, by the way, and I'm not anti-Western medicine, but I don't know how many times I've heard from clients and otherwise people who have cancer or whatever, the doctor says, you can eat what you want. It doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter. It does. And I think that when you can say, well, I may not cure myself of cancer, because who could say that, but I can at least take control over this thing that I can take control over, and I can treat my body well, and I can send myself the message that I'm supporting my body through this. I think those are powerful places to come. I think that control that I'm talking about comes from changing perceived lack of control to perceived places of control, to areas in your life where you may not be able to do everything, but you can do something. I think when you come from that and to consider what can I do, that's the control I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, controlling everything, because some things, frankly, are out of our control. It's just what it is in the modern world or in world in general, in nature. I mean, there's just things out of our control. But it's the perceived lack of control and how that creates stress in a very real way in our lives that is creating chronic stress for us. If you have a perceived lack of control in your life, you're going to be up against day-to-day stress, day-to-day stress, because the perception is you. When you come at your life to change yourself, when you come at your life to teach yourself that you're worth taking care of, that you can do real things for your, no matter what, like we think, I don't have enough money to do that. There's nothing I can do about that. Well, sure, so a lot of us don't have enough money to eat healthy food 100% of the time, or we don't have access to it, et cetera, et cetera. But when we break it down into things that we can do, most of us can do something. And that's where stress is minimized. When you come at your life, ultimately stress is minimized by doing it that way, by saying, what can I do? And being able to actually do stuff. Again, remember the specificity of results. In the beginning, just doing something lowers stress because you're doing something. You're taking control. You're not taking 100% control, but you're making moves in that direction. That results in lower stress and all the benefits from minimizing stress in your life, like lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, lower blood sugar, you know, all these kinds of better digestion, stronger immune system as a result of low, and by the way, weight loss as a result of lowering stress. So again, I just wanted to touch on that sort of perceived lack of control. I think that many of us in the modern world on some level fall prey to this perception that there's really nothing we can do. We're sort of in a pickle all the time. Okay. We're like, yeah, it's nothing I can't. It's genetics for some people. It's job. It's finances. It's what I'm just stuck. I'm trapped. I'm trapped. I'm so busy and I have a family and I have a full-time job and I can't exercise. I'm just trapped, lack of control. I just perceive lack of control. But when you pop in and say, well, I could probably get up and do a squat every hour. What a sea change. I mean, just boom, right there. And you start it right then. While you're having that thought, you can stand up and do a squat. That's big time. Okay, that's big time. Now again, there's voices out there, Google, that doesn't really matter. It's one squat and only 20 minutes of blah, 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 blah make a difference. Well, I disagree. And that's just what it's going to be. Okay? We're going to have to agree to disagree. That's what I always love that statement. We're going to have to agree to disagree is basically it's like a euphemism of saying you're so freaking wrong. I can't even tell you how wrong you are. But I can't tell you because it would sound rude. So we're just going to agree to disagree. Okay. Let's get into the subject of this week's podcast episode. I titled this one Multi-Purpose Solution, and really I've gotten into this already in this episode. Multi-Purpose Solution. Now, many of you were thinking about contact lenses when I titled this way, and frankly, that was the intention, okay? I was like, you know, if I could get most of my listeners to think about contact lenses, I've won. I won that round with mind control. And really, you guys know that ultimately my goal is to control all of your minds. If I can control all of your minds in the way that you can approach your life to make yourselves happy and happier and healthier, is it really that bad of a thing? I mean, really, is it that bad of a thing? Okay. The multi-purpose solution is that my small steps approach is a solution to a multitude of things. I want to hammer home this message in today's episode. And that is that you come first. I've talked about it as holistic self-interest. I've talked about it as my brand of selfishness, whatever you want to say. But it goes beyond that. Not only are you designed to take care of yourself and designed to be happy, I believe that to be true in both counts. You're designed for those two things. And you might go, okay, yeah, I want to be happy and I want to be healthy, so I'll eat better and I'll you know, do some artistic stuff and I'll exercise and stuff like that. But I want to drive home this fact that it's not just you saying I want to do these things and be happier and healthier. It's that the success of your world and the success of the world in general depends on you coming first. It depends on you coming first. The success of virtually every single thing that you do, family, work, friends, everything you do is dependent. It's not just like, oh yeah, I should be doing this while I do these other things. Those things depend on you. Now, you might say, well, that rock star is totally unhealthy and she, you know, she's super successful. I'm talking about happy. I'm talking about happy and healthy. I'm talking about happy. So in other words, you can be financially successful. Sure, you can be financially successful and not be healthy. Sure, that's the world's fault. More people are financially successful, you probably aren't that healthy. But to be happy in this world certainly doesn't come from financial success. That's for sure. I've never met anybody who is super ultra wealthy that's super happy. Just haven't. I'm sure they're out there, but you can look at the world and probably get a good sense that that's not necessarily, one doesn't cause the other necessarily. Okay? But the success of virtually everything you do, and again, I'm defining success as you being happy while you're doing it, is dependent on you coming first. It's dependent on you coming first. And in fact, I think that success without a foundation or an ethic of happiness, I think to come full circle back to discipline, I think that we can draw on discipline to be successful. We can just beat the crap out of ourselves to be successful. We can beat the crap out of ourselves to be fit. I mean, there's people who have amazing bodies. They're super strong and just like super fit. But again, you can draw on discipline. You can be that kind of person who achieves that kind of external looking like, well, that must be happiness. But it's generally not. It's generally not. And I think when we have to draw on so much discipline to be that successful, it's probably because we're not happy in our success. It's probably in most cases, good. This isn't scientific, it's anecdotal. It's my experience of the world. It's actor after actor in Hollywood just falling apart because they can have the drive and they can have the discipline to achieve the good body and achieve this and that. But what I'm talking about here is health and happiness. What I'm talking about is whatever you do, if you want to do it well and you want to live a good life, It's dependent. It's not independent. It's dependent on you coming first. It's not like, I'm going to do that, and also, I think I'm going to be this way, healthy and happy. My approach is so, I can't tell you how much it's not for people who are into nutrition and health as a hobby. It's not for them at all. If you're into nutrition and health and a hobby, as a hobby, this is not that thing for you. And there's plenty of places for you to go. And if you think it's fun, it doesn't have to, you can also do this too. But again, we do better the better we take care of ourselves. And by doing better, I mean we live healthier and happier the better we take care of ourselves. We have better family lives. We have better work lives. We pursue the things that we want in our lives better and more really successfully, not financially, really successfully, the better we take care of ourselves, the more we realize that it is totally about us first and foremost. Not only, but almost entirely. Okay? This is about how we manage ourselves. And I was going to draw this quick parallel before I finish this up. But the idea of the multi-purpose solution is when you place yourselves first, it is a solution to all the things that you come in contact with in your life, family, friends, et cetera, work, and everything else that I've mentioned. It's a multi-purpose solution to small step into your life. You don't have to think, okay, I have to do get better in that way and get better in my job and fix my... First and foremost, come to yourself first. Determine who you are, not who you want to be, but who you truly are deep down, not how you've been acting necessarily, but who you truly are. Small step behaviors that get you closer to that person. And then the effect of that will be improvement in all these other areas. Okay? Not without work. Okay? Not like magically, but you're becoming the person who can then do those things better. That's what I'm getting at. It's like grabbing you by your shirt collar. This is it. Becoming the person over time that can do all those things better. You got to do that first. We want to fix the relationship we're in before we realize that it comes first to fixing ourselves, to doing the things that make us happier and healthier. Then go to your relationship in a much better place. You want to lose weight? Get yourself to a place where you are healthy and happy in body and mind. The weight will come after that. Then dive into that. Up your step at that point to a thing that's going to make you lose weight, but you got to do the real work first. The really rewarding work is that stuff in the beginning. The real rewarding stuff is the, again, back to specificity of results. The super rewarding stuff is in the beginning, learning how to treat yourself well, learning that you're worth taking care of. That's like the thing that makes weight loss, where you finally get to that person where you're like, weight loss, yeah, it's cool. Good benefit. But really, I know that I'm worth taking care of. And I know that now I am immune for most of the time from people giving me crap about stuff. I'm immune to people criticizing me without me asking what their freaking opinion is. Okay? I'm immune because I put myself first, and now I can have a healthy relationship, and now I can do better at my job. I can be more creative in my job because my brain isn't muddled with just BS all day. Okay. Last point. In my history as a professional, I've been a manager and am a manager. And like everything else, and this is again back to the multi-purpose solution, management is about the person. I remember this story to this day. And again, this is like back to my UCLA days. For some reason, that's where my brain's been. I got an interview at the restaurant, at a restaurant in Westwood, California called Chart House, the Chart House. And I remember going in for an interview to be a busser, okay? And I remember I walked in during the day, and sort of what dinner shift hadn't started yet for this, and I cannot remember the girl's name, and I shouldn't even mention it, but it was something like Mimi or something like that. It was great. Anyway, and so I walk in for this interview, and there's a bartender behind the bar getting set up. And this manager that I'm about to interview comes walking in, and she says hi to me. I say hi to her. And she, in front of me to the guy, to the bartender, she goes, "Hey, guess what I found in the office?" And the guy goes, "What's that?" A jar of razors and shaving cream. And he goes, "Do you want me to shave?" And she goes, "That'd be great." I remember it to this day because not only did it make my freaking skin curdle, I remember thinking, holy crap. And also knowing because my sister also worked for Charthouse, a different Charthouse, but she knew this person, that this person had been through their management training, because all managers had to go through management training. So here's a person who has been trained as a manager, and that's how she's communicating. And I went, mother of God, do I not want to work at this restaurant? Looking back at it now, I realize that there are so many things that we can, quote unquote, be trained to do that we can never do effectively unless we, again, guess what, put ourselves first and become the person that can communicate, the person that can act in ways that are powerful and strong. And all the training in the world, it wasn't going to make that person a strong manager, a strong communicator, just like all the training in the world isn't going to make you a good husband just because you read a book that tells you the right words to say. You got to be that person first. You got to do the groundwork, do the foundation work. You come first. The rest of the world depends, is waiting for you to do what you do better. The rest of the world is like, please, will you take better care of yourself, your children, your parents, your friends, everything? Please. They're not saying it, but they want it. Why? Because you're a better person when they're around, just like your happiness depends on other people putting themselves first. Years ago, I fired an employee, and it's my least favorite thing to do. But one of the reasons I fired this person, and this is going to sound weird, is because they were not asking for help. And I had counseled them on more than one occasion about when you are overwhelmed in your job, you need to ask for help. And their thing was like, I don't like to ask for help out of pride. I pride myself on doing a good job by myself. And I said, ultimately, this is why I'm letting you go, because you have lost sight of the goal here, which is to do the job well. And sometimes that means asking for help. Sometimes that means you may need assistance, because your goal and your eye is on the real ball, which is that you need to do the job you're supposed to do really well. If you make it about that you have this idea of you doing it perfectly, again, you're actually not able to do your job. And I had to let this person go as a result of that. It was the weirdest thing. It was like, I'm letting them go because they're taking on too much and they don't know it. They're not keeping their eye on the ball. When you put yourself first and you say, what I really want to do is a good job here, you get over these sort of preconceived notions you have, which is that you never need help. Well, sometimes you do. And when you put yourself first in a real way, in a considerate way, you realize that sometimes putting yourself first means you do need some help, because again, you're doing what's best for yourself. If that employee had listened to me, they would have asked for help because it was ultimately better for themselves, and ultimately, guess what? Better for the job that depends on that employee doing better for themselves. See what I mean? They would ask for help and they would learn and they would try to do it better. But what the idea is, they're getting locked up on this thing that they grew up with for whatever reason. I'm not a psychologist, don't know, don't care. But their definition of themselves is, I don't need help. Well, you do. They do. They did. And sometimes we do. I do. And virtually everybody I know and worked with does on some level. We need help. I'm hoping you're listening to this podcast because you think it might be helpful. Because in the modern world, we can't do it alone. It's too nutty, nut. Okay? We're up against stuff that is nuts. And we've got to figure out a way to keep our eye on the ball, which is health and happiness, and that sometimes we need help and that we need the tools to do this. Small steps is my tool. There's other people who talk about their tools too. This is, you're here for this and whatever. Whether you adopt it or not, the tools that I ask people of in my private practicing work is creating a steps list, is writing a steps list. Okay. Now, some people go, guys, like carrying around the list is like, hey, that's what I think it takes. That's what I think it takes. If you think to yourself, I'm not somebody who needs that stuff, you may, and you just kind of blow your own mind when you realize I kind of do need that, because when I haven't done that, I yo-yo diet and I think I can handle it and then I fail and then I think I can handle it and then I fail and I think I should be able to do it and then I can't and I think I should be able to do it and I fail again and I'm wrapped up in failure. Instead, I'm helping you, I hope, get to a place where you know finally that you want to be happy and healthy, and you're going to do the real things it takes, even if those things are different from how you've always been, and make you kind of lose a little bit of orientation for a second to go like, this isn't something I've always done. I'm not used to this. Okay, I better start really, really small, because this is a little bit uncomfortable for me to do this thing that is so different from what I've done. But ultimately, I realize if I just do the thing I've always done, I'm going to fail again. So maybe I'm going to try it a different way and just see. And I'm going to get frustrated a month in, because in the past, by months in, I've lost 10 pounds. Oh, wait, the goal isn't 10 pounds. The goal is healthy and happy. And wow, in 1 month, I've actually done more than I ever did before. I'm doing all these things every day. Very cool. I think weight loss may come eventually. That's kind of cool. But right now, man, I'm taking good care of myself. Even as busy as I am every day, I can still squeak out some time to take good care of myself. And man, does that feel better for me? And wow, I wasn't as edgy around my spouse when I walked in the door. I'll be damned. That's a really awesome result. Yeah, weight loss. Yeah, I guess. I still want it, but I can see how in the context of this way of living, it's going to come. It just takes longer than the other plans out there that don't last. This is a multi-purpose solution, you guys. This is a multi-purpose solution. This means you taking care of yourself first and then see all the things that get solved, the better you do that. It's a tough sell. It's a tough sell. I'm not saying that. But I think it works. Okay, now that rustling of paper means I'm done. It means that I will be back here next week, because you know that I will be, all right? And you're here with the Approaching the Natural podcast. I hope you come back and listen to me next week. If you like what you hear in this podcast, an iTunes review is super, super duper, and super helpful even. It's not even just super duper duper, it's super helpful. Podcast at SidGarzaHillman.com is how you can reach me if you'd like to email me. In the meantime, I urge you all and ask you all to take good care of yourselves and be well. I'll talk to you next week.
Myself behind, I'm now just running. You haven't beat me, but you've kept me wondering. This is where I close my eyes to you. This is where I've been, I'm crying for no one, for no one.
This is where I-